Hi, this is Amy Impelizzeri, host of Tall Poppy Writers Presents, I Know How This Book Ends, where we deep dive into the story behind the stories of the biggest books out this year. Today, I am so excited to be speaking with Priscilla Olivares, a fellow Tall Poppy writer. She is also, of course, the USA Today bestselling author and 2018 WRA Rita Double finalist, who writes contemporary romance with a Latinx flavor. Proud of her Puerto Rican Mexican heritage, she strives to bring authenticity to her novels by sharing her Latinx culture with readers. Her books have earned, get this, starred reviews from Publishers Weekly, Kirkus Reviews, and Booklist, along with praise from the Oprah Magazine, Washington Post, New York Times, Entertainment Weekly, Frolic, and more. This is amazing. Priscilla earned her MFA in writing popular fiction from Seton Hill University, where she currently serves as adjunct faculty, while also teaching the online class Romance Writing for Ed2Go. A longtime romance enthusiast, Priscilla is also a sports fan, beach lover, Zumba aficionado, who often practices the art of napping in her backyard hammock. That is my favorite sport as well.
Yes.
Priscilla, yes. Welcome. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much for the invite. I'm excited to chat with you.
Well, I am so excited. Of course, Priscilla's latest novel is called West Side Love Story. It is officially out June 1, but it is the Amazon First Reads pick, one of the Amazon First Reads pick for May, which is so exciting. Priscilla, we're going to talk about that and more. Let's talk a little bit about your journey to writing. Tell me a little bit about how did you end up writing contemporary romance?
Okay, well, probably like a lot of writers, I was a reader first. And I just in high school, English and literature were my favorite classes. My junior year, we had a short story like section, 9 weeks or whatever. And so that was when I first, I think, started writing, like really writing like short stories. And at that point, honestly, that English teacher is the first person that asked me about, have you thought about, you know, being a writer or majoring in English, something like that. And it just kind of put that bug. And so when I went off to college, my degree was in English with education, thinking I would be like a high school English teacher.
Right.
And I got married real young, was a military spouse, and we had mm-hmm. a child right away. And we had like the military can do a surprise military move across the country from Florida to California. Wow. And so I had to take a semester off of school because of deadlines to apply, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted something. Yes, I was a mom and I loved being a mom, but I still, not having schoolwork and the study that was kind of like for me, I wanted something of my own just to keep me more occupied. And I did what a lot of people will do and be like, well, I like reading books. Why don't I try to write one? Like, how hard could that be? Famous last words.
Right. Of course.
Yes. And so that was when I was 19 years old, trying my hand on my handy dandy electric typewriter. And honestly, it was 26 years later. I had two more kids and I got 3 degrees and multiple military moves across the Pacific and across the US and life experiences. But it was 26 years before I signed my first contract with Kensington Books. And those early books didn't sell because they were wrong for a lot of reasons, but I kept writing. And even when I became we homeschooled, even when I was doing other stuff, you know, and my kids were my priority, I still like maintained, I belonged to RWA, a romance writing organization, mm-hmm. and kept those ties and would go to the meetings when I could. It was like a part of me knew that even if I hadn't written all month because life and whatever, I would still go to the meeting because I think part of me knew if I cut that tie at any point, like that goal, that dream might just kind of like fade away or, you know, float away. And, and it was important to me, but it wasn't really until my older two were out of the house now away at college. And I finished my first master's, but I started working on my MFA in writing popular fiction.
Right.
And was able to, I had more time. I only had one kid now to be choir parent and, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
so
I was three at home, and I was able to put more focus into my writing. And my MFA really helped me business wise as far as.
Yes, of course.
Learning different skills, writing to a deadline and things like that.
Because the craft of writing is different from the business of writing, right? And so they're both very important to learn if you want to be a commercial writer.
Exactly.
I think it's really amazing this journey that you're describing, how you realized even from as a young mother that you really wanted to make sure and nurture your own self, your own dream. Mm-hmm. And you did it in so many various ways. And you're describing that sort of long journey, although it's not long journey, right? It's all of those things, life was happening and all of those things were happening to fill up that time. And till you had a published book in hand, but in the meantime, you were feeding that dream. You were nourishing that dream. You were watering it and getting it ready to bloom. And so it's really interesting. Were there mentors along the way that reminded you that you had to sort of still keep putting your oxygen mask on? Because I talk to so many mothers who give up that dream. And I was like you, I was fierce about it. I was selfish about it. I just always wanted to preserve it alongside mothering and still do. But a lot of people just aren't able to do that. And a lot of times it's because you lack support. Did you have mentors or support along the way?
I think being active in that writing organization, forming critique groups with other authors, and some were published in the group, some were not, but so that you had those people, like when my critique group was meeting, I wanted to make sure that I had not just pages to share, but like good pages that I had, you know, that I had read over. And so that helped me get motivated. I would enter writing contests. You know, I finaled in the Golden Heart, which was, it's no longer in existence, but it was a contest for romance writers unpublished.
Yes, these are hugely competitive contests, the Rita Awards and the Golden Heart Awards. So that was, these were really big things that you were taking on and succeeding at. So I can imagine that gave you a little...
And I feel like I remember one year getting the call, and whenever the calls like that the finalists were going out, I would try, I would try to like put it out of my mind. So thankfully the early ones were like pre social media, because then once social media started, people would be like, oh my gosh, calls are going out tomorrow. And I would just try to put it out of my head, because I knew by that point, like it was out of my control.
Right.
And it is subjective.
Yes.
Any of those contests, like, yay, when I finaled, I felt awesome. But I had to remember, whether I finaled or won or didn't final or didn't win, that it's a subjective business, right?
Yes.
And it's just, is your book getting in front of five judges that like it, right? Because it takes one or two, and your book is not for everyone. I know that my books, when as much as I want all readers to love them, it's not going to be someone's cup of café con leche. You know, that's not what they want, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Go have a chai tea or whatever.
Right.
I remember specifically there was one year where there was a lot going on in my personal life, and writing just hadn't been happening, and you know, I had gotten rejections, and I was questioning whether have I been beating my head against this wall, and I got the call, and my oldest was still at home. I think she was getting ready to graduate, or she had just graduated, because this might have been, I'm not going to age her, but it was a year where she had just graduated and was going to get ready to go to college. And I hung up the phone, and I must have had like a shocked look on my face. Like she thought something was wrong. She said, oh my gosh, Mom, what happened? What's wrong? And I was like, I finaled in the Golden Heart, and I just burst into tears.
Yeah.
And I realized, like hindsight, that it was that I needed that. Mm-hmm. I needed that validation, because I was not self-validating.
Right.
And you know, so it's just, I would say to anybody who's listening, who is a writer or thinking about it, or if they're in a, you need to surround your, you know, find those people who will support you. My girls were, my daughters have always been a strong sense of support. My parents are phenomenal. My sister. So I've been blessed in that sense. But even now that my girls are off adulting, they're really good about saying, "Mom, this is your time. You know, you go do this, and you put us first for so long. You know, it's good. You need to put you first now." And so that network, whether it's your family, whether it's close friends, you know, find good writing friends. It is important, because in a business like ours, there's a lot of up and down.
Yeah. And that's really beautiful that your girls do provide that kind of support. But of course, that has to be influenced in part because you set such a good example for them, and they saw you balancing all of that alongside mothering. And so I think that's really special. I think that's a really important message for a lot of people to hear. I'm glad you're sharing that. Thank you.
Sure.
Why romance? So why romance? Well, you've explained the journey to writing. It makes perfect sense. And why romance?
Well, I would say, like, at my heart, I am a mushy, you know, like I can watch any movie. I can watch an action film, and I might be leaving the movie theater saying, "That was a great movie." But my next breath is going to be, "But you know what would have made it extra? if this guy and this guy, or if this guy and this girl, whatever, if these two people would have, you know," I'm always going to find a way to add a romantic thread to something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will also share that, my mom read books, you know, she's a reader, but my papi is a big, big reader. And there's not a time that I think back that he did not have, like, he would leave for work. And I would see in his back pocket, he had a Harlequin Romance, because it would fit like that. Those mass market size fit in his back pocket. So he was a huge, and still is a huge, romance reader. And so I just
love that.
I think that influence from him, he get the first adult romance, like the first Harlequin Romance I read was one of his that he let me borrow. We were stuck in a hurricane shelter in the Keys.
Oh my gosh.
And so I think like that influence from him, and then me, just my personality, I prefer the happily ever after.
Yeah.
And the idea that is inherent to romance, that life is going to throw stuff our way,
whatever
descriptor you want to use for that, you know, crap our way, whatever. But if, you know, a romance shows you that if you work for it and you surround yourself with the right people, whether it's your partner, but also those people in your inner social circle, that you can overcome it, that you can get through it, and that love can prevail. And
yeah,
to me, that's the beauty of the romance. It's the genre of hope, we like to say.
So. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is so beautiful. It's a beautiful genre. It's hard to write. It's hard to write well. And it's challenging. And, and yet it is, you know, such a universal language and such a universal genre. So your newest novel, which is absolutely gorgeous, is called A West Side Love Story. So of course, just from the title, you know, before you even dive in, that there's some influence there. There's some inspiration there from a very famous classic story, of course, West Side Story, but of course, even beyond that, right? West Side Story is the retelling of Romeo and Juliet, one of the classic tragic love stories. So why take on a tragic story when you have just said you're a happily ever after person?
Yes. Well, I mean, being an English major and a lover of books, I'm obviously a huge fan of Shakespeare. Like I have fond memories. I finished my undergrad degree when we were stationed in Okinawa. So it was at the University of Maryland University College. And when I took my Shakespeare class, one evening we were reading Hamlet, and instead of meeting like in the classroom, we met at the ruins of this old Okinawan castle with flashlights. And so we read aloud as the sun set, and then with flashlights, and just the mood, the emotion, the everything. That memory really stuck with me. So I'm a huge Shakespeare fan.
And I
love the music of West Side Story. There are a lot, we could have a whole conversation on the original, the portrayal of, you know, of Puerto Ricanos, and did we need a new a revival of it, the Spielberg version. I actually wrote an article for Oprah Daily about it. And I do, there are wonderful things with Spielberg's revival, the changes that they made, deeper characterization and things like that. But for me, yeah. I mean, I still, as much as I felt pride sitting in the movie theater watching Spielberg's version when it came out in December, that ending, if I'm at home and I'm watching West Side Story, I rewind it at the end to Dear Officer Krupke or I Feel Pretty, just so that I end like I need to end uplifted. And I don't think, because I write with Latinx characters, mm-hmm. you know, every story about our comunidad doesn't have to be about struggle and strife and end in despair. And so it was important to me to have an example of Latinos and who are going through conflicts. So it's, you know, I stayed true to parts of Shakespeare's version there's two familias and they're feuding, but they're feuding over property and gentrification. And then now in the present day, they're also mariachi bands and they're battling it out in a battle of the mariachi bands. So they're competing against each other. And so I hold true to that. But for me, it was important to show Latinos getting their happily ever after, just like my parents have and a lot of other couples in my familia and in our community. It doesn't have to end in tragedy. And so was important to me.
I love that. And you talk in the dedication, you dedicate it to your paternal grandparents mm-hmm. and talk about their inspiration for the story. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I knew when the idea first came to me to write a story or a series featuring a group of sisters who form an all-female mariachi band came to me, I knew I would set it in San Antonio. That's my papi's hometown. It was where he's born and raised and where, you know, he lived his whole life.
That's the San Antonio link. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Until he joined the Navy and, you know, left in the Navy and then was stationed in Puerto Rico and met my mom. And so my grandparents live there, you know, most of their, well, all of my life, they live there until they, in older age, and they moved in with a tia who by then had moved to Dallas. But all my life, when we would go to like for family reunions, when my dad was in the Navy, so we were stationed in a couple places in Texas as well. Whenever we would go visit familia, it was pretty much the San Antonio area. We had family in other places, but when we were getting together, like at my grandparents' house, it was there on C Street, where in West Side Story, Angelo mentions like his home, their home on C Street. That's like, you know, because that's where my papi lives. So I knew I would have it set there. And Mariana and her parents in the book are Arturo y Berta, named after my dad's parents, Arthur and Bertha. So I drop a little, it was important to me. I always say that at the heart of all of my couples, like the romance, the love story probably is watching, you know, my parents who they've been married 54 years. Mm-hmm. And so they're like a good example. There's highs and lows. There's, you know, there have been in their relationship, but they've worked it out and they're true to each other. And I saw that, you know, modeled after, in my grandparents on my dad's side, my abuela is in Puerto Rico and grandma and grandpa were in San Antonio. And we always just, you know, like their house when we were there, everybody was there and we would have dance parties and, you know, move the furniture out of the way. And it's the same in Puerto Rico, but when I thought about the Capuleta familia mm-hmm. and they have the community senator, emotions and memories of my time in San Antonio with our familia there. It felt the same. And I knew that if I could really go to an event in the courtyard at Casa Capuleta, I would have the same, it would feel the same way. And I would feel like I was at home. And, So I just, throughout the book, there, all the little places like Majestic Theater has a tie to my familia that I'm not going to tell you because I'm going to share it first with my newsletter.
Okay.
My newsletter follower.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful. Oh, that's very exciting. Okay.
But all the locations that are in the book, several of the locations are locations that are important to my dad's side of the family. Like, we had special events there. And so in a way, it's kind of like being able to bring readers home to my version of San Antonio.
Right.
I did not grow up there. I've never lived there long term, but this is the San Antonio that I know and love. And I enjoy that aspect of being a writer. Like with my Keys to Love series, I grew up in Key West junior high and high school. And
yeah.
So for those two books, I got to like take readers home with me to my childhood home. And now with West Side Love Story and Kiss Me Catalina, the next book, the same thing. I get to bring readers home to Papi's hometown to visit, like I enjoy visiting.
Oh, that is so wonderful. That is really exciting. So is the next book related to West Side Love Story, or are they both meant to be standalones?
They're standalones. You can read them. Like, book one is Mariana and Angelo's romance.
Uh-huh.
So start to finish, you meet in all of my books, they're all standalone, but like you'll meet like the core family.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You will meet the Capuleta sisters. You meet Catalina and her hero. If you read the back of book two, then because it's up now for pre-order, you'll see you meet her. You meet Patricio, who is the hero of book two. He is also in book one. He's the international Grammy-winning mariachi singer who is sponsoring. He and his record label are sponsoring the Battle of the Bands.
Right.
The Battle of the Mariachi Bands.
Right.
And book two is a reimagining of Taming of the Shrew and Kiss Me, Kate. And it's a road trip. Catalina is, she signs a contract with Padua Records, that is Patricio's label, and she goes on the road with him on tour to write songs with him and perform in his, a set in his concert, like the West Coast part of his concert. So it's Taming of the Shrew loosely. It's my version of Taming of the Shrew with Catalina and Patricio. And you will, like, Mariana and the sisters, you know, and Mami and Papi are, Papo and Mama are also in Kiss Me Catalina.
And Kiss Me Catalina is available for pre-order now. That is due out when? Next?
It releases November 1st.
Oh, we don't have to wait that long. That's so wonderful. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yes.
Tell us, you gave us a little teaser about more information that we can get in your newsletter. Tell everyone how they can sign up for your newsletter and stay in touch with you to keep abreast of all the things that are coming up in the next couple of months.
Yes, sure. You can go on my website, and it's Pris Olivera. So that's PRISOLIVERAS.com. And I have an events calendar up there that my assistant and I try to keep up to date with things that are, you know, places where I'm going to be, and whether it's virtual or in person. So you can follow there. And on my website is the quick sign up for my news and notes email. I will say it's usually once a month, like towards the end of the month, I'll send out just a, hey, here's what's coming up, or where I'll be, or what might, any books that might be on sale. But as we're gearing up, counting down to the June 1st release of Kiss Me, I mean, not of Kiss Me, of West Side Love Story, I'll send out usually an email like once a week with some little insider behind the scenes info about the book that my newsletter followers will hear first, you know, that I don't share.
Perfect.
Or I might share like some family pictures that influence something in the book. I'll share with my newsletter followers.
Perfect. Well, everyone go ahead and sign up. We are really excited I'm really excited for this book to hit everyone's shelf. If you haven't already picked your May first reads, please go grab West Side Love Story. Do yourself a favor and shout loudly about it. Can't wait for it to release widely on June 1. Can't wait for everything that's coming up for you. Thank you so much for being here. This was wonderful.
Oh, no, it's fun to chat with you. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah, my pleasure. So everyone, don't forget, if you love this episode, which of course you did, rate it and review it. Don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for being here for season 2.